Today I started off talking about being a misfit. Hopefully behind there'll be the picture of, there you go, as if by magic, picture of the wall. And I talked about, if you weren't here this morning, I talked about many of us in church life feel like misfits, whether it's in our home environment, our work environment, maybe place of education, you feel as if you don't fit. And sometimes that comes into church as well. You might be the one person in that particular situation in your group of friends, and you feel you don't fit. I feel like that at times at Hillsong London. I go there, and because I'm quite a bit older than most of the other guys there, I feel out of place and feel a misfit. But often it's what makes us a misfit that God says, I'm going to use that particular thing and use that into that situation. And so that's what I talked about this morning. But I want to move from that this evening into the world around us. So this morning was very much about, if there's no golfers in here, I don't care, but I'm going to use a golfing analogy. This morning, I took you onto the golfing range, corrected a few things, and now we're going out on the course. And we're actually going to play the game. Because golf is not about on the driving range. Golf is about walking around the golf course. Played on last Monday, and the golf course, the walk round the 18 holes is about 7 kilometers. So I reckon I must have done about 30 kilometers in the way that I walked. But so this evening it's about, let's get out there. Is that okay? Are you ready for that? For those of you that don't know Jesus, maybe you've been invited along here. You know, we're not going to introduce you to a set of doctrines or a set of beliefs. You will get there. I want to introduce you to the person of Jesus Christ. You've already met him. You've probably met him in some way in the person that brought you along, or maybe in the words of some of the songs, you'll have been introduced slowly to this person of Jesus. And at the end of what I say, I'm actually going to set a challenge for you to respond to. I'm going to ask you, will you put your hand up to say, I want to meet this Jesus. I want to know what you're talking about. I want to step into this place of forgiveness and love and community. Or maybe you're here and you've made a decision like that before, but you've stepped out of the community, stepped out of the connection with Jesus. You might have still been coming along to church, but your relationship has gone astray. And I'm going to invite you to come back into that place as well. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So I have a friend, and I actually haven't seen him for many, many years. We became really close friends in Australia and stayed in touch. And then just, I guess, over the past few years, we've lost touch. But he was an incredible friend and really, really amazing guy. He was a great husband. I guess he still is, a great father. Really, really good at his job. He worked in finance and has lived in Singapore and Hong Kong and all these places because he was so good, his company transferred him round. He's generous, he's kind. And he's the type of person you think, I really just wish he'd come to church because he'd be an incredible Christian. I don't know if you've got someone in your life like that, you just think, wow, they would be such a good Christian. I wish they would come to church. And I thought this about Dom. You know, he is the perfect. He made me sick, actually. He's tall. He's good looking. You know, just think about him and punch him in the face, you know. But he's just one of these guys that was just really, really nice. And he came to church once, and he actually came to church on my last Sunday in Australia. I'd invited him. We used to coach water skiing together, and I invited him many, many times. But on this last Sunday, he said, I'll come to church with you. And he came along, and he enjoyed it, you know, and he sang the songs and got involved. And then as we went out for something to eat later, he said, you know that thing at the end where they ask you to put your hand up? I said, yeah, yeah. He said, I wanted to do that. And I was like, yes, come on. Good Christian, awesome. He said, but you know what? I decided I wasn't going to do it because I knew at that moment, if I did it then, I'd be doing it for you. He said, when I do it, and I thought, yes, when? He said, when I do it, I want to actually do it for myself. Problem is, he never has, as far as I know. Never made that decision, never stepped into that place of relationship with Jesus. And he's continued on. He's, as far as I know, he's still an incredible guy, got a very successful life. And I think many of us have those similar type of friends. You just look at them and go, why can't you get it? You got all of this stuff about your life, and you could just step into that place of being in relationship with Jesus. And I think we'd love to have them standing next to us in church, wouldn't we? And I'm sure many of you are thinking, yeah, that person, I'd love to have them here in church. They're great people. They are great friends. But then there are those other ones. Like the person the other day that as I was driving up the high street in Newcastle, and I was waiting to turn into a parking space. It was there. There was only one parking space. And he was driving down. And I was there first because I got there. I'd stopped. It was clear. I was indicating to go into the parking space. Drove down, went straight into the parking space. Now, that's the type of person that when it comes judgment day, I'm sure that he's going to be standing the other side of the fence. And I got to say, I probably won't be sad about that. We have those people in our lives as well where we think, yeah, you'd make a horrible Christian because you're just a horrible, horrible person. And they're the type of people you think, you know, if Jesus knew you, he'd definitely have made a whip and he'd driven you out of church for stealing the parking place. Just work with me. This is therapy for me. But there are those people that you just think, you're an idiot. I don't want you sat next to me in church because I'm ashamed of you and I don't think you'd make a very good Christian at all. You know, Jesus was sitting at a party once and he was sitting with a group of people that they call the Pharisees. And the Pharisees were a group of people. They sort of set the culture of the day. They interpreted the law with a group of other people. And Jesus really didn't like them. It wasn't that he didn't like them as individuals, because he actually got on with a few of them, but he didn't like their attitude to different people. He didn't like the way that they dealt with people. He didn't like the way that they put what they had, the law, above people. And I can imagine Jesus sitting at this party, and he probably didn't want to be there at all, because it was a room full of Pharisees. And when Jesus went into a room full of Pharisees, he knew that he was being watched, because they were always looking for ways of tricking him. They would ask him questions that would sort of try and lead him. I don't know if you've ever been in court. You don't have to tell me now. If you want to tell Pastor Ed, he can deal with those issues later. But I used to be a child protection social worker, so I'd sometimes find my way into court and have to be there and give evidence and stuff like that. But solicitors and lawyers will try and lead you down a certain path so that whatever answer you gave actually led you into a place where it was like you were going to be wrong. They set up questions, and that's what the Pharisees used to do for Jesus. They try and set up these traps for Jesus to fall into in front of people and catch him out. So Jesus, in this party, created a bit of a stir. It was on the Sabbath, their holy day, which ran from 6 o'clock Friday night, sunset Friday night, to sunset Saturday night. And they were, by law, forbidden to do any work. And this was a really strict law. And Orthodox Jews still really strictly adhere to the Torah. And so they would be watching in case anyone did anything that could be deemed as work. And Jesus said to him, do you know what, guys, is it lawful to heal someone on a Sabbath? Knowing full well that they'd already tried to get him on that very thing. And so Jesus just healed this person, it says, who had an abnormal growth on their body. And so when Jesus did that, he actually caused quite a stir with the Pharisees. They weren't happy because Jesus had played them at their own game. They played him in front of everyone. He'd asked them, is it lawful to heal? Because they knew if they answered no and they healed him, they'd have to do something. But if they answered yes, then it was like, what are the people going to say about this? And so Jesus just healed this guy. But most of them were more concerned that Jesus had done something that could be looked on as work rather than the fact that someone had their life changed And they were going to be going home able to provide for their family and live a healthy and productive life. And then Jesus told a story to try and make some of them even more uncomfortable, because there was all this maneuvering around about trying to get the best seats in the house. And so Jesus began to tell this story that would, they'd be sitting there going, he's talking about us, isn't he? Yeah, I think he probably is. And then he tells another story. And this is the story that I want to get into in a moment. He tells a story about people who get invited to a feast. And feasts in those days weren't just a, hey, let's invite your mates around the house. They were actually meals of celebration. It was their meals of transition from one moment of life into another, like a bar mitzvah or a marriage or something like that. There was a real significance about feasts. There would be victories in battles, weddings that would cause people to invite people to a feast. And so Jesus here is actually telling a story about end times, about what's going to happen when the world begins to come to the end as we know it and judgment day happens. So I want to read this story. I want to read it from the message because it tells it in a certain way, if that's okay. Luke 14, 16 to 24. Jesus followed up. Yes, for there was once a man who threw a great dinner party and invited many. When it was time for dinner, he sent out his servant to the invited guests, saying, come on in, the food's on the table. Then they all began to beg off, one after another, making excuses. The first said, I bought a piece of property and need to look it over. Send my regrets. Another said, I just bought five teams of oxen, and I really need to check them out. Send my regrets. And yet another said, I just got married and need to get home to my wife. I get that one. I don't understand that. The servant went back and told his master what had happened. He was outraged and told the servant, quickly, get out into the city streets and alleys. Collect all who look like they need a square meal, all the misfits and homeless and wretched that you can lay your hands on, and bring them here. The servant reported back, Master, I did what you commanded and there's still room. The master said, then go to the country roads. Whoever you find, drag them in. I want my house full. Let me tell you that none of those originally invited is going to get so much as a bite at my dinner party. I've heard this message, not this message, but this passage spoken about a lot. And many people that have spoken about it talk about the different excuses that we can give. And it's like, you know, the wife, the oxen, the land, whatever it is. But what I like to look for is I like to look for the forgotten and the overlooked bits at times. Things that we can skip through and not take any notice of, because it's easy to highlight the hero. The story of David and Goliath, we all want to be David, don't we? But in reality, most of us know in our hearts that we would probably want to be one of the soldiers that sat there waiting for the hero to step up. And the story of David and Goliath is not a story of us, it's the story of Jesus that provides salvation. We're not the hero of that story. Jesus is the one that steps up. But I love to look for in the stories like this, the forgotten, the unsung. And I begin to think about where would I fit in this story? There's a focus on who comes and who doesn't come. But I think we've overlooked a couple of key points in this story. The servant. We bypass the servant, but he's the one that has to go out. He's the one that the master says, I want you to go out and I want you to do the work. I want you to go to the people and I want you to bring them in. I want you to be the one that actually brings the people into the banquet. And in reality, it's the servant's reputation that's online. Because he's the one that's going out and compelling people to come on in and come back for the feast. He's the one that set the feast up in the first place. I can imagine that the servant is probably also, when he begins to bring them in, all the ones that have no concept of social etiquette. It's like when, you know, when we go out for dinner with Pastor Michelle and Pastor Ed. It's great being with Michelle, but, you know, there's always one at the dinner party that's like, no, no, that's not the fork. No, 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 at least eat with the fork. not your hands and fingers. There's always that one person, isn't there? And you can imagine the servant going round and trying to go, no, sit on the chair. No, the plate's on the table. No, you don't drink the soup from the bowl. There's this little thing there, that's a spoon, you can use that. And he'd be running round and trying to stop them maybe arguing and fighting for places, because the people that came in eventually had no idea of social etiquette, had no idea of how to behave at a banquet, because they didn't get invited to those things. They were the ones that were on the street, and they would have been used to be fighting for the food and begging for the food that they had. So when they came to a place where food was given to them, they wouldn't know how to say please and thank you. So the servant is the one who brings the invite. He's the one whose integrity is on the line at that time. And he's also the one that's preparing the banquet on behalf of the master. And he has the responsibility to fill the banquet as well. And I don't know if you've ever had the responsibility of organizing an event, whether it's a birthday party, whether it's a wedding for someone or for yourself or anything like that. You want it to go well, don't you? All the preparation that's gone up to it. Maybe even, I was talking with my wife last night, and she loves cooking Christmas lunch. She is in her element when she's doing that, and she's like, it's all this effort, all this planning, and then it's gone in 10 minutes. It's like demolished, the table is gone, but she puts so much effort into it because she wants it to go well. And you can imagine the servant setting the environment before it goes out for the invite, making sure that all the places are set, making sure that the lights are right, and everything is working well. And then you obviously want the guests to turn up at the event and for it to go well at that time. People often wonder why we do church in the way that we do it. Why do we put all of this effort into to make things look like we do, the lights and the timings and everything, and setting the chairs out nice and straight, getting even the simple things like getting the cards on the chairs straight. Why do we put this effort in? Why do we make sure that we have a great welcome? And often we can say that we do it for God, and we should. The Bible says everything you do it as if you're doing it unto God. But there is also another picture. We do it on behalf of God. We're not just doing it for God. That's part of our worship to him, but the reality is we are doing it on his behalf, because the master has said, come. Bring the people in, set the environment for them so that when they walk in, they feel the welcome. They might not notice that the cards are straight on the chairs. They might not notice that the lights are in the right place, that the temperature, as close as we can get it, feels good for people. I walk around our kids' church. And every single Sunday I do a walk around, and I walk in the room and I'll say, no, this is too cold. I want this room to feel like I'm walking into my living room. And so we set the environment because we're doing it to invite people into that environment on behalf of God. So when they walk in, the overall picture is something that people go, I didn't expect church to be like this. Because everything we do in some way reflects on God, the same way that everything the servant did reflects on his master. We want to do it with excellence. That doesn't mean to say, that's not about, the amount of equipment. When we started off with 11 people in Starbucks, sorry, 9 people in Starbucks 11 years ago, we didn't have road cases full of lights. We had a plastic box from Poundland, I think it was, full of kids' church stuff. But we came in and we cleaned the toilets. Manager didn't know what had hit him. Cleaned the toilets and put nice little cards out and little flowers in the toilets. And it's nice listening to people as they came out of the toilets and went, why were these mints in the toilets? I don't know. It came out and we just did what we normally did, but we did it to the level where we were. We do it with excellence. And I think that's what the servant was trying to do, because when we want people to come in, when we invite people into that environment, we want them to come in and experience the love of God, the excellence of our God. And so we often overlook the servant in what he had to do in the running around and bringing the misfits in. Another thing that I think is often overlooked is in verse 23, where the master says, I want my house full. Do you know we can get comfortable? Because the servant would have come in and all the guys would have been there and he'd have been thinking, this is a mess. I've got enough to do. I've got to get everyone organized. The people are here that really don't deserve to be here. And the master says, no, there's not enough people here. My house is not full yet. Yeah, I know that you've invited people in, that there's everyone here from the streets and roundabout, but I want you to go and extend the invitation further. I want you to go further afield. I want you not to just be in the urban areas, but go into the country, compel them to come in, bring them in. Don't just invite them in, but bring the misfits into my house, because the banquet, the house needs to be full. I think the servant's going, do you not think it's full enough already? I'm uncomfortable. And I think as church, we can have the attitude as well. It's full, surely with the, it's full, but no, we can fit some more seats down here. We can get some more people at the back. We can cut the stage here so that we can get another row of chairs in. The church is not full enough. The church will never be full enough. But we can become comfortable and think, this is messy, this is hard work. I remember a guy saying years and years ago, as he's speaking about leadership and church life, he said, you know what? If you're praying for revival and you think it's hard work now, stop praying for revival. I would say to you, I would bring it even closer home. If you think what you're doing in church is hard work, stop praying for your friends to get saved. Because as people come in, just like the servant who would have had to have been running around and making sure everything was working, making sure that people were sat in the right places, making sure that things were happening, that the food was being brought out, that the banquet was running on time, he would have probably been tearing his hair out. In the same way that, you know, as you do a 10:30 service and a 6 o'clock service, this is getting full. It's probably about time you started doing another service fairly soon. Wow, that's hard work. Yeah. That is hard work. But that's what happens when people start coming to Jesus. It becomes hard work. Stop getting comfortable in our own little lives and start realizing there are actually people going to hell. And if we're saying, I don't want to do anymore, we're saying literally, you can go to hell. And I don't want that over my life. I want my friends to come to Jesus. But the reality is, it's probably not going to be the Doms who make the really nice Christians. It's probably going to be those people that are a bit obnoxious. Those people that don't know when to stand up and when to sit down in church. Those people that don't know when you say, can you put your hand up? They go, no, that's me. I want that. And you're like going, oh, okay, they're enthusiastic. That don't know how to behave in church because it gets messy. So the master extends the invitation wider, and in the NIV it actually says compel them to come in. I think we stop at an invite, don't we? We invite our friends. You got a heap of stuff happening over Christmas, which is incredible. But don't make it about you. Don't make it about, well, you know, we'll pick and choose what we... No, make it about your friends whose hearts and minds are already open to come at Christmas. Don't stop at the invite. Well, I invited them and they're going to think about it. No, I'll pick you up. What time do you want me to pick you up? Stop making your Christmas services about a nice little family gathering. It's gone quiet out there. For those of you that were here this morning, this is the Brussels sprouts, okay? This is what you need to eat. It's not always nice, but it's good for you. We need to extend the invitation wider. The master says, go to the edge of society. Go to the misfits. Do you know that misfits generally know they're misfits? Those on the edge know that they're on the edge. They think that they don't deserve to be in church. They don't deserve to be at the banquet. They don't deserve to hear the stuff that they're hearing. They don't deserve to hear about love and grace and forgiveness, because why would you want to forgive me? I don't know if you've, I think it was Philip Yancey's book, Soul Survivor. Right at the beginning, he talks about this woman, and I'm pretty sure it's that book. And there's a woman that she's in a desperate situation, and she's actually sold her kids into prostitution. And someone said, why don't you come to church? She said, why would I want to go to church? That would just make me feel even worse. Now, I've been a social worker. I know that type of stuff. But church should be the place where we open our arms for the completely, totally messed up. They feel unworthy to go to the feast. They know that they are least likely to get invited. And that's why the master says, compel them to come. Compel them to come to the feast. There was nothing that they had done to earn them a place at the table. The other people that were invited previously, they decided they weren't going to bother coming because, you know, maybe they'd have to owe the master something when they came away. But there was nothing that the misfits, the edge of society, could give back. They had nothing that they could say, well, if you invite me to your feast, then I can give you this. And the master knew that. There's nothing you can do. There's nothing that you have that you can owe me. And that's what grace is. Sometimes the people that we think least likely to come to church are the ones that are most ready. The ones least likely to come are the ones that most need it. Dom was successful. He could look at his life and go, he's doing amazing. And he probably thinks, I'm doing amazing. I don't need anything. I don't need this Jesus. My life is satisfied. But the guy down the road who's broken, come off in and out of drug rehab, he's got nothing to offer, yet he knows his life is broken, knows that he needs love and forgiveness and grace and a community. Sometimes the ones that seem toughest to crack are the ones in need of the feast the most, the misfits. The ones that others disregard, because God wants the table full. I want to ask you, who are you? Who are we excluding from the invite? Are we more concerned about having a church full of cool people or doing what the master wants and extending the invite and having the party packed? Extending the invite far and wide. You know, and those people, if we could have the band come back, that'd be great. The ones that we invite sometimes can be the ones that are least like us. We see at the moment society is divided both across Europe and across the US. Brexit, stayers, Trump, Hillary. I don't give a rip. I don't give a rip what people voted. But as church, we should be able to sit wherever we voted in church together. Loving each other. It doesn't matter what our politics are or aren't, because at the moment you just go, they all seem like idiots to me. And the people that come in will probably be the ones least like us. I want us here in Preston to be a church that doesn't stop with the invite, that doesn't even stop with the bring, that actually goes out and compels people to come in. That brings the misfits, the edge of society home. A church with wide open doors. It will get messy. You will have situations to deal with. But the ones that don't fit are the ones that we have been commanded to compel to come home. John 3:16, God so loved the world that he gave his only son. It says that we should go. Bring the ones home. God sent his son to give us the message of hope, the message of reconciliation. We need to invite, we need to bring, we need to compel the misfits, compel the whosoever.